Welcome back to another episode of the Jasmine Star Show. I am here always with diligence of curiosity and creativity and learning more about how to expand my business in new ways. We have had a continued conversation with no one else than the ever amazing Daniel from the Social Curator team. We've been talking about all things Web3 and crypto. And before you tune out, we're going to be talking about some pretty big updates. And I am still on the consistent path of figuring out how Web3 and business intersect. But before I get there, Daniel, welcome back.
So much. Thanks for having me.
Okay. It feels really good that the band is back. And since our last conversation, well, you and I have seen each other in professional and personal capacities, but for us to dive deep, the last time we spoke specifically on Web3, you and I were sitting in Minnesota. We were at VCon. We were talking about a DAO, a DAO, in order for us to think about ways of possible fundraising in a business. We dove deep around what it meant for a community, and it was like a big high-level conversation. And then since then, which just seems like it was just a few weeks ago, kind of the whole Web3 world kind of melted down. And for anybody who's been a part of the conversation early on and they're like, this Web3 thing is like a piece of junk, why are you wasting time? It felt like it was a prophetic fulfillment of their deepest fears. But I kind of want to sit here and I want to talk about like what's happened since then. What are we still doing? How are we looking at this? And like contextualizing, what does it actually mean for business owners who are a little bit curious in expanding their business in the Web3 crypto world? So let's start there. Let's start after VCon. What has changed?
Right. Yeah. I mean, since VCon, melting down is almost a light way to put it. It's definitely been a bit of a train wreck since then. We've seen some of the highest highs in crypto are now like something of the past for now. I think when we were last speaking, and if I can remember correctly, I think Ethereum was maybe at $3,000 per coin. And as of today, we're looking at around, I think, $1,500, $1,600. But there was a point in the past few weeks where it had reached like $700, $800. So we've definitely seen some real peaks, but we've definitely seen our valleys since then. I'll get into kind of like what the whys are as we keep talking, but I'll kind of leave it at that for now. So like what's happened, we've seen a lot of like huge price fluctuations, and we also had our bet.
Hold on. Let's keep people on the edge of the seats, because Daniel and I did make an on-air bet, and we're going to talk about the bet and what that bet meant and how y'all should just never learn, like just always learn, never bet with Jasmine, because I don't make bets. I can't lose. I don't play games. I can't win. Okay. So here's the thing. Let's start at actually a couple things that I have noticed, and I'm not sure if we've had the opportunity to talk about these things, but I think it's really interesting. And I'm focusing on the positive of what I've been seeing in the Web3 space from a business capacity. Now, people and organizations who have money to spend are going to most likely have the most latitude to experiment. I'm currently not in that space to be like, oh, I want to do a big investment to do something in Web3 on my own, but I'm watching what other larger organizations are doing. And so I kind of wanted to share a couple things that's been highlighted that I think very interesting. I don't know how to piece it all together in the business world yet, but I just want to document like, hey, I've been watching the game and this is what I'm seeing. So I'm going to bring up 3 to 4 examples, and then we can kind of riff a little bit about the similarities and the differences. One of the things was in the luxury market. This is very, very crazy. So Tiffany and Company, did you see? You're nodding your head. Do you know what I'm going to talk about?
I heard something about it. I saw there was a headline. I think, was it a major investment? Or they like launched an NFT collection, something like that, right?
Yeah, okay. So what they did is they launched Tiffany and Company jewelry pieces that map to people's NFTs. And so it was a limited amount, and it was something along the lines of like 60 ETH. It was like an all diamond necklace. I literally did a screen grab because I was like, I have to tell Daniel about this. CryptoPunks and Tiffany and Company did a collaboration, and they had a limited amount of Tiffany and Co. diamond necklaces for 60 ETH of your CryptoPunk. And some people are like, in the beginning, when it dropped, people are like, this is the dumbest thing. Who in the world is going to spend 60 ETH on a necklace of their CryptoPunk? And they sold out in just a couple of days. So what does this then go and show? That there is something that is a very cool cosign of a physical property matched or paired with a digital asset. Now, a lot of times people were wondering, is this even going to work? And then there's Tiffany, who came out the gate and said, not only will it work, we're going to sell out of something that's ultra luxury. And so I thought to myself, interesting, interesting. Okay, so now let's just pull back a little further. Let's look at a traditional old school organization, classic luxury Tiffany & Co. And then you have CryptoPunks, one of the earliest NFT projects. So we have these two kind of big pillars, each in like a physical and a digital world, and they're coming together with a limited opportunity. Now, just imagine that you have a CryptoPunk and then you also bought the matching necklace. Your NFT is now worth more selling it in a pair than selling it individually. To me, I heard about this and I was like, hot dang. Interesting. Daniel, what are we thinking about this?
I think for one thing that it is interesting to see that they were able to bring something digital into the physical world without really placing any explicit link between the two. Like, the thing that's always worried me about off-chain physical assets has been keeping it up to date and keeping it symmetrical. Like, okay, this person owns a Bored Ape, and therefore they also own the Bored Ape t-shirt, let's say. Let's just say there is a Bored Ape t-shirt that comes
I'm getting
with every
to that.
Bored Ape. So then, like, what happens if someone sells the Bored Ape, but not the t-shirt? They still have the t-shirt in their closet. Like, now we have this, like, asymmetry with the chain and reality. But that's what's really interesting about this necklace, is I feel like they didn't really place any explicit connection there. It was just like, it was almost like a real world airdrop. It was just like, you guys get to have this cool thing, and that's it. Like, there's nothing more to do about it. And there's no, like, other explicit expectations when you're then selling your ape after buying this Tiffany & Co. NFT or bracelet or jewelry. I think that's probably the, in my opinion, like, one of the best ways to execute on it, because that, I feel like at least right now, there's no obvious way to fix that problem of, like, keeping the real world caught up on with the chain and vice versa.
But just imagine now the value of selling them both. It's like, if you could sell the NFT and you have the necklace with it, do you think that the NFT is now worth more as a pair of the two?
I could see it being worth more. I mean, just from the point of view that it is literally more, but I think maybe it's also more rare because maybe there's very little sellers out there that are selling their Bored Apes along with the things they
received. It was a CryptoPunk.
My bad. Okay. Well, same thing applies here. If it's a CryptoPunk and they also have this Tiffany & Co. Jewelry, then I would think that, yeah, it's probably more rare because it's like, the way I would see it is maybe you have like one collector's edition, let's say some doll, right? But if you have the entire collection of those collector's editions dolls, like, now that's a far more valuable asset because you have the, it's like you've completed the set. So I can see that being more valuable for sure.
Okay. So just, this was written on CNN. I just cross-referenced. So Tiffany & Company debuted and quickly sold out of a limited collection of 250 jewel-encrusted pendants for holders of CryptoPunks. So you had to be a holder of CryptoPunk to actually be able to get the pendant in and of itself. So like Daniel is saying, it's like, I think like so strongly that if you had a CryptoPunk, that CryptoPunk is going to be super expensive. But if you have the CryptoPunk with the matching necklace, game over. It's no longer like an apples to apples, like which CryptoPunk are you going to buy? It's like, you can charge so much more for what you have as a result of that. Now, I don't know what that actually means for the small business owner yet. I don't know what it means for the small business owner yet, but I just think that this is a powerful proof case that people are willing to spend a lot of money to show a physical. So at least at this time, if you have a pendant, it is proof. You get to wear your pendant out to prove that you have an NFT. You have always had the CryptoPunk, but you, unless somebody's looking at your wallet, they don't know. And so now what rich folk get to do is get to floss their digital asset in a physical way. This is just the beginning. I see so much here. I don't think it's like quite tangible for like the small business owner, but just watch, son. I see it brewing. I see it brewing. Okay. On that note, anything else to add? I don't want to jump on.
No, that's like all my thoughts on it.
Okay.
I think sure. I definitely agree right now. It's going to be reserved for the people that could afford you know, a crypto punk right now. Like, those are the kind of people that would drop that amount of money on a Tiffany & Co. piece of jewelry. But I think, like, what we always see is that, like, the more high-end markets get to experience more novel things before everyone else, and then that stuff slowly starts to trickle to everyone else. So I can totally see us sometime in the near future experiencing things like that on a regular level.
I do too. And, like, already Artifact and Nike. So Nike bought Artifact, which is like a powerful NFT. I can't even, like, I don't know, like an enterprise. Like, these people know NFTs, I would say, better than most at their minimum. And so what they were doing was they were creating custom Nikes for their NFT holders of Artifact. So if you're in the know and you see somebody wearing a pair of these Nikes out, you could look and be like, dang, you part of like the Nike Artifact tribe. So what you see strongly is people are wanting to physically show their digital assets. I think it's very interesting. I'm just like calling it out and being like, small business owners, there's something here. Just keep your eyes peeled. Secondly, okay, so for people who don't know, there is an NFT project called Bored Apes. And right now they are super ultra expensive. And so what happens is that when somebody drops, and Daniel, please feel free to jump in and correct the lingo, okay? So I'll put it out in like the most layman's terms, and then you can like fix it up and make sure that we're legit. So if somebody drops an NFT project, you have the capability to choose as the creator of the project, whether or not people who own the NFT can license a likeness. So when Bored Apes dropped, right? You're gonna see all these like funky, weird looking Bored Apes. Now, if for instance, that Bored Ape is shared somewhere and money is made, you get a cut of whatever it is. So there's a Bored Ape called Jenkins the Valet. There was just somebody who bought the Bored Ape and then decided, I'm going to create a character. Now they just bought an image of an NFT, right? They just bought an image of an ape. It's an NFT. And then some creative people said, you want to know what? We're going to make Jenkins the Valet, the premier, the standout ape of all apes. We are going to make our NFT more valuable. So what they decided to do was write a story, a movie line, there's merch, and they are getting a cut of everything that they're putting out because they have licensed to that. Now, there was an interesting thing happened with Bored Ape that one of the apes got commissioned, I believe it was for like an Old Navy or a Gap t-shirt. So the Bored Ape got put on the t-shirt. So the people who have access to that ape, so in an NFT collection, this one ape was done more than one time. So people get a cut of that license. So every time somebody buys a Bored Ape t-shirt from, like, I believe it's Old Navy or Gap, they're owned by the same company. But the people who own that NFT get a cut of that. Again, freaking interesting to me. I'm like, okay, what does this mean? What does this mean? I don't know yet. But what I do know is that my brain, I map patterns and I'm like, something's happening here. People want a piece of that lifestyle. The Bored Ape became a symbol of a lifestyle, the way that a Mercedes kind of like tri-prong logo has become something. And so people are wanting to hold on to it. And as a result of being an investor in it, people are now getting paid so that their ape is broadcasted. What are we thinking, Daniel? What are we thinking about this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do you one better. I mean, there was a Bored Ape that just got drafted as a professional soccer player. Like I think it's part of FIFA or something. Like, it is like actually it is the first professional digital athlete. So what? I don't exactly know how this translates into reality. Like, do they play on the field or are they like infinitely benched? Like, how does this work? But they are like part of a team, as far as I understand. I read it somewhere a few days ago. I think we're gonna have a lot of firsts, and many times over for the next few years, where it's just like, this is something I've never heard of, but it's happening. But I do want to speak to one thing that I think really stands out to me: the difference between CryptoPunks and Bored Apes. You can see clearly the growth in Bored Apes versus the growth in CryptoPunks. CryptoPunks doesn't have that same permissive license that the Bored Apes do. Because of that, we don't see CryptoPunks being drafted. We don't see movies of CryptoPunks. And it's because the owners of those CryptoPunks are aware that whatever they do with those, they're not really entitled to those funds. So I think it's setting a stage right now, or it's setting a precedent for future NFT projects, that they have to decide, like, are we going to have a permissive license? Because it could come to a detriment of the bottom line of the project, but it could come to a benefit of the publicity of the project, because now you're putting the NFT in the hands of people that are willing to market it and right. do really novel, interesting, exciting things with it.
Mm. Okay. So this is something that you and I actually spoke about in Minnesota, and I probably shouldn't say anything because I didn't put enough thought behind it. So I don't want somebody who's actually very familiar with NFT to be like full on hater. It was just a random idea I had while we were walking through the streets. So we were at VCon for Gary Vaynerchuk's event. I had bought his V1 NFT. So I bought a Loyal Lobster, and we're sitting at dinner, and I'm like, you know, like if nothing else, so V friends, you don't have any access to the license. So regardless of how big the Loyal Lobster gets, if they decide to turn it into merch, a cartoon, put it on sweatshirts, I don't get any dividends or any like returns as an actual NFT holder versus with Bored Apes, you do. So I thought, even though I don't get any like licensing kickbacks, I thought to myself, what if I were just to be like a massive promoter of Gary Vaynerchuk's Loyal Lobster? And if I create content around the Loyal Lobster, and if I'm always talking about the Loyal Lobster, and I'm talking about how great it is, and I'm buying the Loyal Lobster merch because, oh, there's Loyal Lobster merch. I bought it there in VCon. I ordered it online. Like, I'm like going to be a big proponent. What if myself and a group of other Loyal Lobsters, like perhaps we all have personal brands and we start putting it out on social media, is that we can essentially drive up the demand and value for the Loyal Lobster, because we're a group of people, like maybe we could be like position ourselves as like tastemakers. Like we saw the Loyal Lobster, we like what it represented. We want to be promoting this. And could we, on the back of our social followings, newsletters, whatever, we start promoting the Loyal Lobster to drive up the value of it. And then if we wanted to sell it, we would be on the upside because we've created demand for this particular character in a suite of NFTs. Tell me why that idea is not good.
I'd say in this particular situation, because it's not a permissive license, it's not a good situation. Because for one thing, like the NFT collection owner could come to you and say, like, please stop. Don't continue what you're doing. We do not want you to continue. Like, it is actually like a legal problem. We do not want you to continue.
Okay, but wait, why would they want that? Why would they want us to stop? In this pretend situation, I'm not doing this, Gary Vaynerchuk, don't come after me.
I would say it's for the same reason that like Disney sues random people for having like Mickey Mouse on their car and stuff like that. Like, it's just like, there's no really rhyme or reason. It's just like brand protection. Even because it could be something super out of the blue. Like, yeah, maybe you had a car that looked like Lightning McQueen and you had like the eyes and everything, which Disney, I think fairly recently did tell someone to stop doing that. But let's just say that car gets in a car crash, or that car runs over a pedestrian. Now it's bad for the brand, which is understandable. But I mean, if I'm being completely honest, my personal opinion is I wish the world wasn't that way. But the world is that way. And, you know, you do have to respect those laws. So I'd say in this sense, like, you can do it. You can try to promote your Loyal Lobster, but you run the risk of like, well, for one thing, you have nothing to gain from it because you don't own it in the sense of like the copyright. And two, like, you run the risk of like Gary, you know, approaching you and being like, can you please stop?
Okay, if Gary ever came to me and said, can you please stop? I would die 1,000 deaths. I would be like, and my husband made me do it. It's all his idea. Like, that JD guy, boy, is he awful. Okay, so one more thing before we dive into the bet. We're not sure who won the bet. We're about to announce it. We're going to do the bet. There was one other thing. Now, remember, we started the conversation by talking about, like, there's these big organizations that have the time and the wherewithal and the money to start investing. So on National Avocado Day, now, most people are like, whoop-de-whoop, National Avocado Day. Who even knows what day that is? Well, as CEO of Social Curator, we create content to help people join the social conversation around these types of holidays. And so anyway, I was very familiar with National Avocado Day. And I was also very familiar with Chipotle. So Chipotle, they had a big announcement in June, late June, early July, that Chipotle was going to give out $200,000 with new crypto video game. So this is on 137pm.com. And so on July 25th, Chipotle announced the launch of its interactive game, By the Dip. The announcement comes in preparation of July 31st, a special day in all the hearts, Chipotle fans, National Avocado Day. Chipotle initially immersed itself in the crypto world in April 2021 when they announced becoming the first restaurant in the United States to launch a cryptocurrency giveaway, Burritos or Bitcoin, which pledged to hand out $100,000 in Bitcoin to celebrate National Burrito Day. The restaurant also dabbled with crypto in June 2022 when they allowed people to pay for burritos and bowls with Bitcoin Ethereum, Dogecoin, amongst many others. Okay, so here again is an organization who's just like, we want to be the first. And so when I heard about this, I tried playing the game. And Daniel, you know, I don't play games. Like, I am not a video game player whatsoever, but I'm like, okay, Chipotle crypto, let's see. I couldn't even access it. Too many people were hitting the site all at once. I can't even speak one iota to what it was. But people were saying, for the first time, go. It was just really interesting, if nothing else, just to encourage people to start getting into the game in that capacity. So Chipotle, which really doesn't have the need for people to pay with crypto, is actually making ways for people to pay with crypto and then incentivizing people to set up wallets in order to play their game and buy guacamole on National Avocado Day. What do we think of this?
I think it's a great way to get exposure for something that either people have a very visceral reaction to or are not aware of. I think when you mention a lot of cryptocurrencies to people or NFTs or anything like that, there is a crowd that does have a very specific reaction, and they don't, either they feel like they don't understand it, or they feel it's unnecessary, or they feel it's predatory, or anything along those lines. And I think seeing it in such a playful manner, seeing it just being used to have fun, seeing it being used as just a way of transaction is going to be really helpful. I think buying a burrito with Bitcoin or Ethereum or Dogecoin is a lot more fun than trying to teach someone kind of like the theory of it, being like, okay, well, there's this thing called Bitcoin, there's this thing called Ethereum, there are cryptocurrencies, and then going through that whole thing versus just being like, you can buy a burrito with Ethereum, try it. I think that's a lot better way to expose people to this field. That being said, obviously, like, I mean, Chipotle has a lot to gain from this too. It's a great PR stunt. I mean,
yeah,
they're definitely going to have a lot of crypto fanatics, you know, buying burritos and whatnot. But then also, just doing novel things as a major company is always a good way to end up in the news. So, but
absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is, I would say, a net benefit for everyone.
Okay, so here's another idea that I want you to poke a hole at. Now, I know we came here to talk about like an update on an explanation of the bear and bull market. I know that, but I felt like if we started too heavy in the beginning, people couldn't see actually like why, number one, I'm still fully dedicated to learning more and to figuring this out. I am in it for the long haul. Like, in my gut, I look at something and I'm like, I don't understand this, but there is something absolutely here. So from a business perspective, this is a conversation I'm like, Daniel, poke some holes. Remember my theory, like, you poke some holes around me trying to promote the Loyal Lobster? Poke some holes around this. Okay, so we have to start. What am I? Like, part of like a vigilante? Look at it. I believe that in order for Web3 or crypto to start getting adopted in a bigger way, it has to be a win-win-win. It can't just be like, hey, use crypto to buy this. Why? If the dollar works just as well, why am I going to go out and do something different? And so then when you look at different industries, and I'm specifically focused on creatives, when I look at like, what is the derivative of a piece of artwork that's sold? Well, if you paint a painting and then you sell it to me, you make money. And if I sell it and that painting goes up in value or even down in value, it doesn't matter to you. You've already made the initial transaction. That is us in the physical world. But in the digital world, if you create something like an NFT and I buy it and I resell it, you are also getting a residual from every transaction thereafter. So that's like an actual physical, like an artist. And then when you think about a music artist, so most musicians, and Daniel can speak to this clearly because he comes from a very talented family. He's actually musically inclined. He would never say as much, but he's like really incredible. His sister's also really incredible, doing big things on TikTok, like signing with producers. I'm about Daniel's family. Okay, so imagine that when you see, like, let's just paint a picture. So Daniel's sister, her name is Kayla. Let's imagine her as big as Taylor Swift one day. And she is going to be making most of her money out on the road. Most musicians make their money by selling merch and tickets because the record label is doing most of the fronting of the recording and all of those finances, and you get on the road to actually make some money. So let's just say Kayla, AKA Taylor Swift, is out on the road. And right now it's dominated by, let's just say, Ticketmaster, right? Like, that's where you get most of your tickets. You have to buy through Ticketmaster. It's kind of like a monopoly. Like, if you're going to be an artist, you're going to be buying through this one vehicle. So it doesn't really make sense for Ticketmaster to be like, hey, buy with crypto. Why? There's no added benefit to the artist. There's no added benefit to the end user. However, What if Kayla gets so big one day that she, as big as Taylor Swift, can say, you have to buy tickets to the concert with a wallet, with crypto. Here's why. Every time that ticket is resold, I still get compensated. That we still have a proof of origin. There's no more fake tickets. And then outside of being able to put it on an Instagram post or take a picture of like the ticket stub, it now exists in somebody's wallet to look back and say, you went to the Kayla show, AKA Taylor Swift. But it would have to take an artist, like a really big artist, to say, I want all of these people to change their behavior. And then also do it and make it not look like that, like Taylor Swift or whatever is being shiesty. Like, go and download a wallet, blah, 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 so that I get like my, so I get mine at the end of the day. Where are the holes in this? Like, what am I missing here?
Well, there's a few things. There's a few positives and a few negatives here. I think positive is, at the moment, Ticketmaster, I think, is testing out one feature that allows you to have a digital collectible along with your ticket. I think I saw it once when I was buying tickets for some concert. It was something like, okay, you know, buying this concert ticket also will give you access to a digital collectible. Okay, that's sweet. I mean, I think that's a step in the right direction. Obviously, digital collectible is vague, because that could just literally be them keeping track of who, like maybe it's like a little badge or something on your user account, or it could literally be something on the Ethereum blockchain that you own. I don't think they've gone that far yet, because I personally didn't experience that with that feature. The negative, I'd say, is, yeah, the technology is there. I can say we're able to do it. We're able to do concert venue ticketing. I mean, we did it for you know, VCon. We were able to purchase a ticket through an NFT, and that was our access in. I mean, there was a few steps in between. Like, we had to, like, you know, link this NFT to, like, their app, which I think, ideally, in the future, that doesn't have to be an extra step. But we're in a place right now with Ticketmaster where venues are not allowed to move away from Ticketmaster. So, like, if they were, let's say, for example, Taylor Swift is going to perform at Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden is actually terrified to leave Ticketmaster for Taylor Swift, because maybe that one night will be filled with Taylor Swift fans, but they're blacklisted from Ticketmaster for any future venues, for any future concerts. So, like, now,
it's not the mafia.
Another artist. Yeah. It literally is a mafia. Like, Ticketmaster will bully you into, you know, signing with them. Like, you will not be able to use any other ticketing service. And there's no other option. Ticketmaster owns AXS. They own Flash Seats. They own, oh my God, there's so many. I can't even go through.
Okay. But what if I, see, this is just me. Like, I'm such a contrarian, Daniel. Like, I immediately go to, fine. Taylor Swift, Harry Styles, think of every big headliner out. Like, Harry Styles, okay, if you're not from LA, you're not familiar with the Forum. But let me just tell you, the Forum is not as big as Crypto Arena, formerly known as Staples Center, but the Forum is like massive. I think it's like 25,000 seats. Harry Styles sold out 18 shows at the Forum. Come on, Daniel, who in the world, like, give it up for Harry Styles, our English, like, wow. Our favorite Brit right now. Love him. And I'm like, congratulations. So what would it look like to essentially, I mean, I don't want to use the word unionize, but like, is that what it's going to take? Because I believe that creatives, specifically musicians, have so much vested interest in residuals and like building a base around people who could really, like, essentially, when you have that digital asset in a wallet, you're broadcasting your taste to other people. Like, you experience that. It's your level of taste. How cool. So what is the likelihood? Are people really willing to put their necks out in that capacity, do you think? Or how far do you think that we're away from before people like make a big shift in how they promote, buy, fill up a stadium?
I definitely think we need a massive, massive shift. Like, something extreme needs to happen before I think we'd be able to get out of this rut. I don't see anything changing anytime soon with the ticketing industry. It is pretty much the only game in town right now, and they're making sure of it. Even if Harry Styles and Taylor Swift together were like, all of our concerts from now on will not be using Ticketmaster, the venues simply will not host their concerts.
Wow.
Maybe that means we have to have concerts in the middle of a cornfield for a little bit. I'm down with that. That sounds a lot more fun than being packed in to some random venue. I'll do it. If it means that we can starve out Ticketmaster, I'll do it. But I think that's where we're at right now.
I'm pretty sure we can safely say that Ticketmaster will never sponsor this podcast. So there we go. It's good that we don't have any advertisers. Okay. So speaking of bursting my bubbles. So you've bursted two of my bubbles. I thought I could be like, hey, I can increase the value of my Loyal Lobster by promoting it. And you're like, yo, it's going to be like Disney shutting you down with Gary Vee, like knock at your door and say like, girl, step off. That would hurt my feelings. Number two, like there's just so many massive changes that would have to take place before a musical artist is compensated by way of like digital Web3 style ticketing so that they're getting residuals of any of the resales thereafter. So, okay. So speaking of bursting my bubbles, the question of the day is, has the bubble burst for Web3 in general?
I'd say we're quite there. Yeah, we're definitely in the free fall part of it. Free fall is extreme, but the bubble is definitely popped. Like, people are not as excited right now as they were a few months ago. But I'll get into why I'm not too concerned in a little bit. First, I'll be all doom and gloom for the next few minutes, and then I'll provide kind of like where we're headed. But yeah, I think we're definitely in like a crypto winter right now. It's going to be this way for a bit. But I think this is a good time to invest on the way down, because you're getting stuff at a discount. Things will return to their previous prices and higher. This is definitely not the first time I've seen a dip in crypto. It's probably like the second or third time I've seen it. And out of nowhere, 2 or 3 years later, you'll just be like, oh, I forgot about it. Oh, and wow, that's like 10x what it was when I was first looking at it. So you're going to wish that you did buy at a time where everything was crashing. But yeah, I'll save some of that stuff for later. But basically, yeah, we're in a bear market. And to kind of define what that is, just basically, we're in a dip. Things have gone down. A lot of crypto projects have collapsed. A lot of people are a lot more reserved with their money. Like, they're not, no one's just shelling out money like they were a few months ago, where it's just like, oh my God, this crypto project can do really well, or this NFT project can do really well, and just like shoving money in there and hoping for the best. People are a lot more conservative now with their money. And that even goes up to like the institutional level.
Okay, so I want to pause here for a second and talk about the why. Because if you're not really following what's going on in Web3 or crypto, you'd be wondering, why are so many people like essentially shoveling money into this? Well, the vast majority, much of what contributed to the bubble popping was people saw this strictly from a financial advantage. They say, I can buy this NFT and then sell it in 2 or 3 weeks, or heck, 2 or 3 days later at like a 6x or a 10x return. So what was happening was, there people were like not even really caring about the project, not really caring about the community, not caring about the artist. And they were just like, yo, this is money. I'm going to print some money. And what happens is that all of a sudden, everything becomes super inflated. Everything contributes to the bubble getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so what Daniel is saying, yeah, people are being a lot more judicious with their money. The people who have been a part of Web3 and crypto are going to stay that way. So what you see right now is not like a dip in interest from people who actually believe and love the project. You see a lot of people who are like, it's no longer a financial advantage. Yo, I'm out, which is fine, which is what the last conversation that Daniel and I had around community was less about building the biggest community, although we hope that happens for you. It's about building a community, people who are going to be a part of the project long-term, people who are like, I get the vision, I like who I'm doing it with, let's have some fun, let's build. Because the difference between investing in a business, like if you invest in the stock market and you invest in a business, that's great, but you don't have a say in what's going on. You're also most likely not getting any dividends of what's happening as a byproduct of what you invested in. But with crypto, at least right now, there's so many opportunities for you to be a part of something that perhaps in some projects, you can have a say. Perhaps in some projects, you also get the version of whatever a dividend would be, that you get some sort of kickback for being a part of the project to begin with. So when Daniel's saying like, listen, there's been a stalling, it's been a stalling from people who are looking at it solely for making money. But the core of the community is still there, which is why I believe Daniel is still advocating for building community and getting invested in projects that you really want to be a part of the community. Did I hear that right?
That's absolutely right.
Cool. So when we talk about these things, can you explain, like you had said, the difference between a bear market and a bull market? And a bear market is just basically, hey, there's a dip. How long does a bear market normally last? Like, what are people looking at?
Good question. I remember back in 2017, we were in the middle of a bull market. And that was actually kind of like when I first started getting into crypto. It was just before 2017. And shortly after that, I think Bitcoin had reached $20,000 for Bitcoin, which is funny because like Bitcoin is currently $20,000. And that's our floor right now. Like that is like, wow, Bitcoin is down. Back then that was, wow, Bitcoin is overvalued.
Right.
So a little bit of a perspective shift there. But yeah, and then 2017, about 3 years later in 2020, was when we saw crypto really rally again. When everyone was stuck at home with the coronavirus pandemic, everyone started investing in crypto again. So like this asset that I had chosen to forget about, you know, because after 2 years or 3 years, you decide, you know what, I have my holdings, I'm going to leave it there. And maybe it'll go up, maybe it'll go down, hopefully it goes up. But you know, I can live without this, which is obviously the way I want everyone who's listening to this right now to invest. I don't want anyone to be investing something that they're going to be checking on every single day. Like I want you to be putting the right amount of money aside that you can not look at it for years and then come back to it and be like, oh, nice.
Okay.
So about, I don't know, at least the last cycle was 3 years.
Okay. That's perfect. Now, when somebody hears you say, and I want to be like very conscious of it, they're like, yeah, Bitcoin is at $20,000. And if you like, you know, back in 2017, it was like, wow, it's so overinflated. And now what you're saying is like now $20,000 is the floor. And when people hear that, that sounds like such a foreign concept. They're like, who has $20,000 to invest in this? But remember in one of our previous episodes, we talked about fractional ownership. So for somebody who's just like, hey, I don't have $20,000, but I might have $700. What do you recommend to them if they're like, hey, I have $700 that I'm willing to forget about for about 5 or 6 years. And then when I come back, hopefully it works in my favor. And if it doesn't, I'm not attached and it doesn't make or break me. What's like the silver lining to the situation? We can now get in at a lower price, but how?
I'm always going to recommend, if you're looking to invest in crypto, I'm always going to recommend Bitcoin and Ethereum. You'll never go wrong with those. They're like the two largest cryptocurrencies available. Bitcoin is the first one ever. It is the most stable one. At its core, Bitcoin is not changing anytime soon. Ethereum is the one that is kind of like the more experimental currency. It's the one that's like trying to innovate every few years. We actually currently have like a major event coming up in the Ethereum community called the Merge, where we're going to go from proof of work to proof of stake, which I don't want to get too into like what those mean. I think we might have gone over it in a previous episode in the past, but basically all it means is like Ethereum is going to get a lot more efficient at processing transactions. But there's also a few mechanisms there that are going to make Ethereum a more valuable currency because there will be less supply of Ethereum tokens because of this change in mechanics in the currency. So that being said, I'd say your best bet is I'd rank Ethereum first, then Bitcoin as like a good place to put it as of today. Both of them are going to be good investments. Bitcoin is probably like a tiny bit safer than Ethereum, but I'd say the risk is almost equal.
Where does somebody go to buy fractional ownership?
Ethereum is slightly larger.
Where does somebody go to buy fractional ownership? Like if they have like $500?
It would be pretty much any exchange. Any crypto exchange will allow you to buy a portion of a coin. I just always recommend Coinbase to people that are new to the field. It's just the easiest way to do it. There are other ones that have better fees or, you know, maybe it, like talks to people in a different way, like their branding is better. But Coinbase is something I recommend for anyone who's just getting started.
So here's one thing. We will never be sponsored by Ticketmaster, but Coinbase. If you're listening, call your girl. Okay. So Daniel, as we wrap things up, let's talk about the bet. So for people who are listening, we had a 5-part NFT series. Now, if you're just listening and you're still a little confused what NFTs are and Web3, you can go to jasminestar.com/NFT checklist, or you can click on the link in the show description to actually download a guide with videos, workbooks, definitions, us breaking it down. Well, in one of those episodes, I believe it was episode number 4 of the Crypto Curious series, Daniel and I made a bet. And we made a bet as to, okay, Daniel, you take it away. You're a much better storyteller.
No, that's you. I think we made a bet on where we are in the bubble, or more specifically, where we are in the hype cycle. We had an image that we had pulled up. I actually have it right here. I don't know, should I share my screen or are we just going to like impose it later? Like what should we do here? Okay.
Let's share the screen. Let's have some fun.
All right.
So as Daniel's bringing it up, he, in this episode, he was talking about the hype bubble. Now, Daniel thought that we were in like, okay, actually now describe it. So we have the peak of inflated expectations and the trough of disillusionment. Okay, take it away, Daniel.
Okay. So peak of inflated expectations. This is where we were kind of when we first started the podcast. Things were going really well. Then we kind of like started dipping. And this is where Jasmine and I started to differ on our point of view of like where we were. I thought we were here. I thought we were at the trough of disillusionment, which is
at the low down. Yes. Yeah.
And Jasmine thought we were kind of like on the way down, kind of like in the middle. Is that right? We're kind of like,
yeah,
in the middle.
I did. I was like, oh no, baby, we got a long way to go. And you're like, no way. I was like, yes, we do.
So yeah, here we are. And it's like, we're a few weeks later and that was definitely true. And how much was at stake? Was it 0.1 ETH?
Yes. So what we decided to do was we said, okay, in four weeks. We're like, in 4 weeks, we're going to see where we are. And if we're lower than what we expected, Jasmine win. And if it's higher than what we expected, because where we are on this graph, Daniel would win. And so there it is. We bet 0.01 ETH. And unfortunately, the price of ETH dropped as I won the bet, but I won the bet. Definitely. What was at the time that you had sent it, how much was 0.01 ETH?
I think at the time Ethereum was maybe $1,000. So I think I sent you $100.
I think I remember it was like 125. I think at the time. I think it was 125. So ladies and gentlemen, I am now $125 richer. Much to my chagrin. I actually wanted, that's a bet I wanted to lose. But to each their own, to their perspectives. And if you ever met Daniel, you would realize that Daniel is the silver lining to any gray cloud. Of course, he would think we're at the lowest point because Daniel looks at everything optimistically. And I am a walking gray cloud. I'm just kidding. Daniel, like always, these conversations light me up. I look forward to them. And I just really feel fortunate that we can stand as a testament to say, come what may, this has been an adventure. And I'm still fully dedicated to bringing people on the journey, demystifying, breaking it down, and then seeing like, maybe we can't use it in our business exactly seamlessly the way we see it now. But at some point in the future, we together will point back and say, we started this conversation early. And so go with us on this journey. And at some point, when you are using it in your business, be sure to pay it forward and extend what it means to be a part of the crypto community and Web3 and finding ways to help other people. Daniel, you're the best. You're the best.
Thank you. You're the best.
Thank you.
And you said, we're early. We're early. Mm-hmm. Everyone here is early. I'll sit until I'm blue in the face. We're here early and things are only going to get better from here.
Yep. So cheers to the trendsetters and the rule breakers and the ever optimists. Thank you 1,000 times over for listening to the Jasmine Star Show. If you'd like to dive deeper into NFTs and try to find your cadence within this new sphere, jasminestar.com/NFT checklist. Daniel, thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you.